Good morning and happy Thursday. This is Caroline from the City Mission, and it's time once again for our half-hour weekly news program, Faith in Crisis, serving your neighbors in need. In this program, we've been sharing about several urgent issues and opportunities the church has to engage their neighbors in need around the greater Cleveland area. We're on the second half of a two-part episode in our series called The State of the Ministry, where we're discussing our two main programs, Laura's Home Women's Crisis Center and Crossroads Men's Crisis Center. Last week, we spoke with Denise Eady, program manager of Laura's Home. And today, I'll again let our guest introduce himself.
My name is Michael Hahn. I'm the program manager for Crossroads. I started with the mission a little more than a year ago, October last year.
Thanks, Michael. We're so glad to have you here today. So let's talk about the basics. How long has Crossroads been in operation? How many men do we serve? And what essential services has Crossroads always offered to men experiencing homelessness and crisis?
Sure. Crossroads started in 1993. From the very beginning, they've been doing things like vocational training for the guys, offering meals three times a day for the men, residential facilities, so that along with that comes with the ability to shower, provide emergency services like for clothing, place to sleep, especially during cold weather, if things were overflows, things like that. So those have been like kind of the staples of what we've always done, along with like chapel and our biblical counseling and things of that nature.
So Crossroads has been around for about 15 years now then. That's pretty incredible that they've been able to offer these essential services for so long while adapting to the changing needs of the times. And last week we asked Denise this question: why might someone come to the City Mission? And I imagine the answer might be a little bit different for men than it is for women. So could you tell us more about that? Why would a man end up staying at Crossroads?
Man, there's just, it'd be so much easier for our jobs if it was all the same reason, right? But there's just an incredible wide variety of reasons guys come to us. A lot of what we're facing right now, about 40% of our guys are coming to us with an active addiction, either through some type of narcotic use or alcohol, things of that nature. So a lot of active addictions, a lot of guys, that's the reason why they've come to us. We also have a very large percentage of our guys come directly from us, from the prison system. Right now, about another 40%, a little less than 40% of our guys do come directly from, dropped off at the doorstep right from the prison by the sheriff's department and from the jails. So, and then mental health is also a huge concern. A lot of these guys who've been chronically homeless for years, in and out of many different shelters, it's a lot of the reason is undiagnosed mental health illness. Some of it's been diagnosed, but they just can't manage their medications properly. Mental health is a huge reason why these guys are coming down here. And then there's the few guys, you know, it's just some random thing, crazy thing happened to him. Like, I had a good job, my car broke down, and then it started this whole crazy chain of events, and now I'm down here. I don't have a home anymore, things like that. My house burnt down, and I kept all my money in my bed. I've heard that a few times. It's kind of crazy, but it's just such a wide variety of reasons why these guys are down here. And that's kind of the challenge of it all, right? Because you can't look at all these guys with like a cookie cutter approach for everything that we do, because it's just so many different reasons.
And I think our next question goes along with that answer very well. So what are some of the most common misconceptions you hear about the men who are staying at Crossroads or about our program in general?
The worst one that we probably hear, the biggest misconception, is that the guys are here because they're lazy, because they just don't want to work. They just don't want to be engaged back in the community. They lost their job. They're dealing with the consequences of all their things that they did. But like we just kind of talked about, that there are just so many factors. Yes, the guys do need to take responsibility for some of the things that they've done. But there's so many factors that have gone into it that have led to where they're at, that it really just, it's, you can't just have like one reason of why a guy is down here. You know what I mean?
All right. So if men are coming to you from many different places, different directions in life, how do you structure a program to cater to everyone? What does that structure look like? And what are some of the classes that men are taking in their time at Crossroads that will help them as they move on toward the future?
Sure. So we actually, it's fairly, very structured down there. I guess I could say another misconception is that that we're just an emergency shelter, that all we do is guys come down here and sleep in a bed, and that they're all homeless. They're all just down here, you know, letting the winter pass and then they leave. But we're so much bigger than that. The bulk of what we do is programming. And programming is kind of a generic word. We do a lot of different classes, a lot of different counseling, case management, and things like that. So in terms of our structure, we do have two main outreaches. Our first is our emergency shelter. So we do have guys who can, maybe they just need a short stay. Maybe they, like we talked about, they still have a job, but something happened with their home, burnt down. They just need a place to stay so that's a maximum of 30 days. So a guy will be there. During that time, they're expected to attend chapel. And then if they're in our room, we do have a support group that they do attend called Open Door. If a guy would choose that he does want to participate, and maybe in the program, and the program is anywhere, the average stay is about 9 to 12 months for the guys who are in a program. That's where the real work happens for the guys who choose to do that. So there's within our program, there's three different phases. Technically right now, because of the amount of guys who we have seeking services, we have created a fourth stage. So a guy will select to do the program, and that's when he'll enter into what we call our pre-program phase. During that time, he receives an on-site service assignment, which is more or less a job that he'll be working on location. But some of those look like working in on our maintenance team, working on our custodial team, working in the kitchen. We do have laundry services, so working in laundry, things like that. And the goal for that is to kind of start to get guys back into the habit of finding meaningful time throughout the day of working and being engaged. So a guy will receive in pre-program OSS. They also will attend chapel, and it'll be expected that they attend Open Door. And again, Open Door is a support group run by one of our staff. And really the focus is really just settling down, starting to work on, you know, some of the causes that brought them there. A lot of maybe some start opening up on some of the issues that they've dealt with throughout their life that kind of all, a lot of it kind of brings them together, starts to have some unity that we're all the same, you know. While we have all these different problems, we've all have a lot of shared experiences. So it's really beneficial for the guys. So a guy would go through pre-program and enter into the rest of our phases. So we have three other phases. So in phase one, a guy will start Touch of Reality. And Touch of Reality, it's one of our introductory classes. So usually pre-program, a guy will be here for about 8 weeks because of the heavy amount of guys that we have. Right now we serve about 110 clients. So we have all these guys going through programming. This introductory class, it's a group format, and it just kind of allows guys time to settle into the City Mission and really get a sense of what's going on. The focus of that class is on their readiness for change and what the change process looks like, because it is a process. And it's built on the idea that God desires for us to be both holy and whole together, and that these two paths will serve to reinforce the other so that we have to live in fullness with God. So they work on things like stages of change, the different masks people wear, and start to identify maybe some triggers that have set them off in the past, you know, things that have kind of could lead to their crisis through different traumas and things that they've been through in the past. So after they graduate Touch of Reality, that's when they move on to phase two. Phase two of our program is they'll start DBT, and this is our big word, dialectical behavior therapy, as some people have heard of. So dialectical behavior therapy, this is actually typically the favorite class that guys will attend. It's a lot of feedback about how great it is for them. So the term dialectical means it's a blend of opposites. The primary dialectic between DBT is between opposite ideas and the acceptance of change. For example, DBT accepts you as you are while also acknowledging that you need to change in order to reach your goals. So DBT is taught to help increase a guy's ability to resolve problems that may have caused out of control emotions, thoughts, and behavior. Some of the skills, they also help the guys to manage difficult emotions while teaching them effective ways of interacting with others. So a big portion of this is getting guys ready for work, because we, as know, it doesn't matter where you're at, there's always going to be conflict at some point, either with the supervisor, with the person working next to you. It doesn't matter how good of an employee you are, conflict happens. And so teaching skills to be able to deal with conflict when it does arise is something that our guys definitely we like to work on, and they attend. So we also teach during that phase anger management. Anger management obviously is standard as it sounds. It's a work on the anger. Most of our guys, just because of the trauma and the abuse and neglect and things that they've experienced throughout their lives, they arrive just angry and upset at the world. And while we recognize that not every single guy has extreme anger, we do require that everyone goes through it just to be able to have those skills. Because just like with DBT, there's conflicts going to happen. So to be able to have the skills, to be able to kind of recognize your anger when it's starting and deal with it before it really turns into a problem is completely necessary for these guys. So then as a guy will enter, they complete our phase two, they'll go into phase three. Phase three is really where, so technically we have two phases within phase two. So there's our first phase, which we call 2.1 or 2.2, whatever we call it. So the next phase is 2.2, where guys will start, the focus was now going to be on work and transitioning and income stability. So those take place in a course that we call work prep. That is geared towards God's design for work and why men should be engaged. If they are receiving Social Security disability, it's why they should be actively volunteering and find things to have meaningful work. It's part of God's design for us. So that'll be work prep. They do things like working on resumes. Also, we do a week of mock interviews throughout that process. So after work prep, they go into the culminating class of Launch Point. Launch Point is really starting to develop long-term goals that's both going to involve just their sustainability to kind of keep them resistant to crisis in the future, and also how they're going to sustain their relationship with God and continue to work on that. So once that takes place and they graduate from Launch Point, guys enter into phase three, where the sole focus is working on housing, working on job readiness. So sometimes that's participating in vocational training, things like that, and just getting out back into the community and starting looking for work. And so that's where the guys who go to the end phase, that's where all their work goes into.
That sounds like a lot to keep track of. What do you enjoy most about being the Crossroads Program Manager?
What I've enjoyed, there's two things that I think I enjoy the most. The first is every day is something new and a new challenge. You know, I'm one of those people who I've had the cubicle job. Where it's the same thing every single day, and God didn't cut me from that cloth. So to be faced with a new challenge every single day, because it's so dramatic and different for every single guy, that's something that I love. But the other thing that I think I love the most is being able to see myself in the guys, because as you get to know them, as you get to work with them, you start to understand that they're no different than me. They're no different than you or I. They just had some crazy circumstance happen. There was another thing that happened that God had that was in their path, maybe mental health, maybe an injury that took place, and all of a sudden now they're addicted to drugs, they're addicted to alcohol. Maybe they had an abusive parent, and I didn't have that, but that thing in their life, that those traumas just kind of set them on this path of this horrible path that they've been on for decades. So to be able to just like kind of start to see myself in them, and it's a reminder of the goodness of God and what He did for me, and the good things that He provides every day for my life, and and just an under greater understanding of what it means to have joy, and that through suffering and through watching these guys through, go through horrible suffering in their lives, that they can still have that feeling of joy and understanding that God's in control of me. God's in control of this situation, and it doesn't matter what I'm going through. I don't need to lose my peace because I rely on God now. Mm-hmm. So I'd say that's my favorite part of working. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for sharing about that. Are there any specific stories or testimonies from your time at Crossroads that you believe really represent what the city mission is trying to accomplish and the hope that we have to see transformation in individuals' lives?
Yeah, I can think of at least two right off the top of my head. We had this young man, his name is Robert, and Robert had been through a significant amount of trauma in his life, just terrible things done to him. And so by the time that he showed up with us, he was using to kind of as a, basically self-medicating, dealing with his own the trauma that he had experienced in his life, started using drugs, became addicted. So he started off going through IOP, going through that process. And you would see Robert the first few weeks that he was with us, literally you'd just like find him in corners with his hood pulled over his shirt, like literally holding himself almost daily because like almost like hiding. Just you could just see this trauma and experience this suffering that this kid had gone through. And so just over time, throughout the time in the program, beginning to interact with the other guys, beginning to interact with the staff, you just saw this guy start to open up. He worked with Bob Daly, who was on our maintenance, and just that interaction between those two, just you could see this mentorship and this discipleship begin to take place. And Robert started to really open up. He started to stand taller every single day. And he went all the way through our program. And then, so towards the end of it, he was accepted into a culinary program within Cleveland, known as Edwin's, which stands for Education Wins. It's a great program that these guys have the opportunity to. And he went through he's gone through that whole program, and it's allowed him the opportunity to have a significant career in culinary. And just like you see this restoration that took place with Robert, and it was amazing. Another situation that we've had where I just felt that like it was evident that things went right while he was, because it doesn't go right for every guy. Some guys just aren't willing to change. Some guys aren't really to put in work. We had this guy named David. He was here for a while. So David had been in and out of prison his whole life. He had severe mental health issues, anger issues. He'd lost multiple jobs because of dealing with just violent outbursts. So finally, David came to us, and it was rough in the beginning. I mean, there's still a lot of arguments with him, but he kept sticking it through. And over time, we, through our mental health, he started seeing counseling, got him on, linked with a psychiatrist, and started getting him on the correct medication. And he made it all the way through the program, and eventually we got him linked with a service called Eden Housing. So what Eden Housing provides, basically David's now going to have lifelong supportive services for his mental health disorder along with housing. So I know that throughout that, no matter what circumstance he's going to be facing, he's going to continue to have caseworkers, continue to have services that he needs throughout his life because of the circumstances that he was given. So that was an amazing thing. It's a lot of work to go through the process of getting someone into that, and it takes a lot of time, but it's just amazing, amazing for him.
Those are two very powerful and unique testimonies. And I think we hear a lot about Laura's Home in the media, but I want to take the opportunity right now to hear about what your needs are at Crossroads in terms of help and volunteers. Could you speak to that?
We really do desperately need volunteers down at Crossroads. I mean, we do have some very, very faithful volunteers who come to us every single week, every single month, and we heavily rely on them. And we also have some very dedicated groups that come to serve meals, which we also really rely on. We are a nonprofit organization that depends on donation. So having those groups come and serve the meals and interacting with the guy, we absolutely heavily rely on. But what we really need an increase is individual, mature Christian men to come down here who just want to interact with the guys and just want to develop relationships. These guys are absolutely no different than you or I or anyone in the church. They just had another circumstance that's kind of placed them here, and there's been a string of circumstances that's placed them here. And to be able to connect them with a strong Christian male who can maybe start to mentor and start to come alongside of them, that's the difference between whether a guy remains in crisis for decades or if he's brought out of crisis, is having those strong people unite around them, because many of them have burnt bridges in their lives just because of their circumstance, because of addictions, things like that. So to be able to kind of restore them and bring them back, we need those male volunteers down here. We just don't get very many of them, and we desperately need that just to come down here and interact with the guys, get to know them, develop relationships, get to know each other, start to see yourself in them, because we're all one crisis away from being in a lot of the same circumstances.
Yeah, it really seems like the key is consistency in relationships. So if any of you listening want to volunteer at Crossroads, get involved at Crossroads, you can head to our website, www.thecitymission.org/volunteer. And we hope you'll check out the opportunities that we have available to serve specifically at Crossroads. So moving into the later part of our interview, let's talk about what your overarching goal is for the men at Crossroads who enter the program. If you had to summarize that, what would it look like?
I'd say the overarching goal, and I've said it kind of threw the word out there a few times, is restoration. We believe that God created us to be relational creatures. So we need to restore first the relationship with God. A lot of these guys have rejected God, or through the suffering that they've had, stopped seeking him. Maybe they did grow up in the church and they're no longer in the word, no longer engaged. So restoring that relationship with God is first. And then second, restoring the relationship with themselves. Because out of the trauma, out of the things that they've done, out of the sins that they've committed, a lot of these guys just have so much guilt and shame. And it's understandable. I mean, sin, there's consequences for sin, right? And it's devastating to their lives. So taking responsibility for what they've taken, for what they've done, taking responsibility for themselves. So restoring and then showing them who they are in Christ, if they have that relationship of that they can be victorious, that they are accepted, right? Even that their sins are forgiven. It doesn't matter what you've done. So restoring that relationship with themselves. Restoring relationships with the community. Out of the things that some of these guys have done, out of just of what's taken place in their life, they, for the most part, they now feel alone. They feel by themselves. They've burnt all the bridges in their life. So we need to restore them back to the community. And that's where the church comes into play. That's why we need mature Christian men down here. And that's why we need the church. Because let's face it, we're working with decades of trauma, substance abuse, issues, decades of being incarcerated and being institutionalized. It's not going to stop in 9 to 12 months while we have them. So what we need is the church to come alongside of these men so that they can leave this place and be linked with the church and be supported again and be restored back into the community, where when maybe crisis does come along again, the church steps up as it should with their own congregation and come alongside the guy and assist them. Not in a way that we're giving them handouts, but in a way that we're giving them that hand up so that they're coming along the process, but we're supporting the guys so that they're not coming back into crisis when times do hard, because relapse does happen. It's just part of it. Relapse takes place for these guys who have substance abuse. Guys get in, hardship comes, we lose jobs, cars break down, it happens. And if we don't have, what is the difference for you and I, why I'm not in crisis, is that I have relationships. So that maybe if I lose my child care, right? I have maybe a family member or a friend who'd watch my child. If my car breaks down, I might be able to get a ride from a friend. I might be able to get a ride from a family member. So we need to restore these relationships back with the church. And that's why the church needs to be engaged down here with these men. So we need to restore relationships to the community. And then finally, we need to restore their relationship with creation. So through work, through being engaged. God put us on this earth again to work the land, right? So part of that is making sure that we are working. So making sure that these guys do volunteer, have the tools to be able to have sustainable income, long-term income, not just short-temp work, right? So restoring them back to creation. So summarize restoration and all those different areas of life is the goal for these guys down here.
It's so great to hear you explain it that way because it truly is a biblical model of transformation. We're not here just to give out food or give out clothing. While all of that is well and good, the true goal is restoration. And as we're speaking to the church, could you share with them on the radio here any final words of encouragement about how they can support the city mission or your hope for the church's involvement in our work here?
My message for the church is just that this is a requirement. God gave us the poor, and Jesus told us that we will always have the poor with us, and that these men down here are no different than you or I. Again, they just had the circumstance. So it's our obligation to reach out, and it doesn't need to be down here at the City Mission. There are people in your community right now, wherever you're at, who need just someone to come alongside of them. Not to give them things, not to just hand them meals, not to just give them cash while they're standing on the road, but to come alongside of them and develop relationships. Develop relationships with people, because that's what the church is for fellowship, relationship, to support one another through this walk of life, because there's sin in this world. It's hard. We can't do this alone. We can't expect others to do this alone. You wouldn't expect someone from your congregation to do it alone. We have to get these relationships united again.
Awesome. And I know we're grateful for the many, many members of the church body that already serve with us and support us in many ways. So thank you, Michael, for your time. It's been wonderful having you here today. And we look forward to speaking with you again here on 1220 AM The Word next Thursday at 10 AM. We hope you'll tune in again as we discuss another issue surrounding homelessness and poverty. In the meantime, we hope you'll visit our website, www.thecitymission.org. There's so much happening, especially with the holidays coming up, and we'd love to see you around. So visit our site for ways to help and ways to get connected. Again, you've been listening to Faith in Crisis, Serving Your Neighbors in Need, produced by The City Mission. God bless and have a great day.